EFL. It's the Football League podcast that raised concerns about its performances to the Queen, but got the all clear. Coming up, Bluebirds fly highest in Wales. Let them all slash Leeds come down to the Den and take the points. Streaky Lee's sticky start and new week. Start again. Get beat by some crypto bros. Powered by Quinbet. This is What the EFL. How you doing, listener? It is the start of another weekend. I'm absolutely buzzing because my car passed its MOT this weekend and I get to podcast with two of my very favourite people. Adrian Clark's been all over the radio this weekend. How are you, Clarky?
Oh, mate, I've got a busy old week. But I had Saturday off and while all this EFL action was taking place, I was at Legoland, giving it large on various small roller coasters. But it was good fun. What a day it was, yeah.
Excellent. Our next pundit was known for going to Pieces in the Box. That's a Lego joke. I mean, it's not true because he scored 100 goals in the Football League. Daddy Daycare for the last few days. Parkin, you got much left in the tank to give us today?
Parkin's having a busy week. I'm having the polar opposite. I'm going to go and sit and just stare into middle distance in a cafe of my choice this afternoon. I'm going to travel for a sandwich that I crave from time to time. That's how I'm feeling on this Monday morning. But no, it's been busy with work and leisure. It's not leisure, is it? Looking after children. But it's been a really busy weekend. But as you're about to hear, I've got some soccer in as well, and some mighty fine soccer at that.
What's in the sandwich?
They dress it as like a special like Italian sandwich. I think it's a ciabatta. You know, I wouldn't like to be held to account on that when I get down there. If there is any listeners on the podcast, I'll buy you two if I send you a snap later. But they just have the most glorious fillings. They do a Parmigiana. They do like a meatball with mozzarella. It's the sandwich really that makes it. It's almost like a pizza dough.
How about this? The guys at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this podcast. It's 18 plus. And remember, always gamble responsibly. Jumping in at this point, listener, to tell you something you probably already know. It was announced just after we finished recording that Wednesday's game against Stoke will be Neil Warnock's last in charge of Huddersfield Town. He is leaving his position as manager. He explained why in his pre-match press conference.
I think we've actually done what we set out to do, really. I think, as Jake said, you know, Kevin's wants a three-year plan to get in the Premiership and... And I've always said, when Dean brought me back, you know, I mean, it was Dean who pleaded with me for days and days and days and changed my mind. And I said to him, look, Dean, I'll come back and help while I'm wanted. And, you know, obviously, once I'm told that, you know, they're ready to bring somebody in, yes, I've got to admit, I thought it would be about Christmas time. Are you with me? But it's come earlier, you know, sooner than I'd expected. But once they've told me that, you know, I think you've got to move on quickly, really.
Okay, we'll get into the weekend's action next. We got to start in South Wales, haven't we? We billed it as the biggest game of the season for both sides last week. Well, it was Cardiff who have reason to crow as the Bluebirds bested the Swans on Saturday night, halting Swansea's run of four successive South Wales derby wins. It took a while for the goals to come, Adrian. Ollie Tanner, the sub, kind of the inspiration for this, but I don't think much doubt that the points went the right way.
No doubt about it at all. This was really convincing. I was a little bit, I won't go as far as to say I was boyish about Cardiff last week, or bullish is the word, isn't it? Bullish.
Yeah, buoyant or bullish, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of went in between there, didn't I? I just felt that they were creating chances. This is a more exciting, this is a Cardiff side with a lot more thrust than it has been in recent years. And I think they showed that, particularly in the second half of this derby, where really they just ran all over the Swans. Yakub Mate had a very, very good game, you know, driving at them, shooting from distance. Carl Rushworth was tremendous between the sticks for Swansea. And then, yeah, you had Aaron Ramsey. When space began to open up, he really came to the fore in the pockets and began to drive the team forward. And yeah, it was the sub, wasn't it? Ollie Tanner that really made the difference. Bit of a super sub. Beautiful switch of play from Jamilu Collins, who really impressed me, by the way. I thought he was excellent at left back. Great switch. and he's just run at the defender, you know, and taken it inside and whipped it into the far corner. And obviously for the penalty as well, he isolates the guy 1v1, knocks it past him and draws the foul, even though I think it was just outside the box on reflection. So, yeah, very, very impressed with the second half from Cardiff. Real power, determination. Swansea, worrying, I think, for Michael Duff, for the supporters. They were meek, in my opinion. Offered very little, particularly in central midfield, where they were trampled all over, I would say, by Cardiff. And yeah, I think they've got some problems moving forward. Caught between two styles of play, and there was a lack of character, I think, from Swansea in the second period amid the Cardiff onslaught. You looked direct; it was almost as if they were looking around, saying, well, "What are we going to do about this?" And no one had any answers. So yeah. I think the Swans are in trouble. I think that Michael Duff needs a result quickly. Otherwise, it would not surprise me if they made a change.
Yeah, they go to QPR midweek. Then they host Sheffield Wednesday at the weekend. Those look like games that they need to get something from. Probably win at least one of those, you would guess. And meanwhile, on Sunday, Leeds United season properly up and running now after a statement win for Farkas Folk in the capital. They swatted Millwall aside 3-0. And Sam, this is just the absolute justification for signing Joel Pirro, right? Somebody chasing promotion this season was going to get him, and he showed why he's the kind of perfect signing for a team looking to do just that here.
Yeah, I think, yeah, a really good display from him. Really enjoyed the first goal. There was obviously a lot of disappointment from the Millwall side because they felt it was a foul on Nisbet from Pirro at the start of their counter-attack. I don't think it was. I think it would have been really soft. And then, obviously, when the ball bypassed Billy Mitchell, I think it was, from Archie Gray, they were in massive trouble. It was a 3v3. And then Pirro, because of his desire to get and join in the attack, actually sprinted past a couple of Millwall defenders or midfield players. Norton Cuffey, the right wing back, was the one I felt was just a little bit slow to react. If he sprints back and smells the danger, maybe Pirro doesn't get the goal, but his two touches are beautiful. And him and Ruta are going to have a great partnership, a really good understanding. The touch and then the slot, when you're moving like that, the signs of a top quality marksman. I think he's very, very good. I thought he would have immediately thrown Southampton into a different stratosphere. Yeah. Had he gone there, I think he's a brilliant signing. We probably knew this about Leeds because we saw it at Ipswich the other day. So that's 7 goals now on the road since they've made these signings, or since Daniel Farkas had a bit more clarity probably about how he's going to go. And just that strange 0-0 at home to Sheffield Wednesday sandwiched in between, where they passed up quite a few chances. But no, really exciting. Obviously on the counter-attack, I think that's interesting what I just said actually. At Elland Road, they're probably going to come up against teams that sit in and show no ambition. So maybe this is going to be the pattern that we're going to see. Devastating away from home when teams come on. Millwall at home, going to have a go, going to leave space. And at Elland Road, it may be difficult at times to break teams down. So yeah, it was a really good away performance. Millwall, yes, there's going to be a lot of criticism of Gary Rowett, and there already has been this season. But I think, again, just take a breath, hold fire. This is a whole new team, pretty much. That's 5 players across the middle, only Billy Mitchell with experience at the Den playing games for Millwall. This is a new midfield, a bit of a new look, back three with Ryan Leonard playing at the right-hand side. The same problems still exist, though. Lack of pace there, a lack of guile in the midfield, the one who can control the ball. And I think the strike force at the moment, the forward players at the moment, missing a talismanic Jed Wallace, a talismanic Steve Morrison, Lee Gregory. They don't have Tim Cahill, let's go back a few decades. They don't have that person to pin their hopes on, especially with Fleming out of the side. And I just think Bradshaw and Nisbet as a duo, I think they're a bit too samey, to be honest. And I know he was trying to get Kiefer Moore and Lyndon Dykes if you go back to the summer. So that's a bit of a glaring omission from the Millwall squad if the fans are going to get what they crave. And that's probably a little bit more thrust and a bit more aggressive aggression in the top end of the pitch.
Yeah, going back to Leeds, that's good depth, isn't it, in the wingers. So they start with Nonto and Somerville, and then, you know, 69 or whatever it is, Dan James comes on, Jaden Anthony, who Bournemouth really were quite reluctant to let go, but they did it to facilitate the Sinisterra move. These are two very, very good players to come on at championship level. And I think that is the key for Leeds this season in those games that you were talking about. I think on the counter, that front four, whoever they are made to go and hurt the opposition against deeper lying defences. At least Daniel Farke can mix it up, can't he? He's got those options on the bench to change things if plan A isn't going to plan. So yeah, I think Leeds look pretty good. I think probably need a bit more depth in central midfield and maybe a bit more quality at the back, but yeah, I think they've got enough to muddle on to January on that score and be competitive in the division. A partnership is blossoming there, I think, between Pirot and Routier, who I'm still staggered, got very little game time last year. I think he's someone with a lot of talent that could have done something for Leeds in their quest to stay up, but he was absolutely cast to one side, written off as a no-hoper. And I think we can see that Jorginho Routier is no-hoper.
Sometimes you just need to reboot your Routier, don't you? And that sorts the problem out, and maybe that's what Leeds did over the summer. We love a surprise package on this show. Preston North End, are they this season's team that no one predicted would do much, that actually end up doing loads? Well, they're top of the championship, Clarkie, as it stands, and it took them less than a minute to make their intentions clear against Plymouth.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it? 5 league wins on the spin for Preston North End now. The only unbeaten side left in the championship. So well done to them. It's built on a solid platform, isn't it? I don't think they give a lot away, Preston North End, even though Plymouth had more chances than Preston did in the game. I think the quality of those opportunities was not that great. There's one really good save from Woodman, from Kessler Hayden. But apart from that, I think that they kept them at arm's length okay. This match was all about the debut of Liam Miller, a Canadian international. He came in at left wing back. And I think that maybe has been a slight problem position for Preston in recent times. I know that they've used Robbie Brady there. It feels like a lot of different players at left wing back down the years. A lot of centre halves have kind of been plugged in there to do a job, to add balance. But this guy looks to have a bit more about him. He's more of a winger than a fullback. And he just had an absolute fairy tale. You know, produced the assist for the opener, scored the second, which is a brilliant goal. Again, it's a little bit like Pirot's, wasn't it? I don't know if you saw it, Sam, where he just knocks the ball in field and then takes the shot nice and early. It was really smooth from Liam Miller. And then later on in the game, he goes around on the outside, puts a beautiful ball into the box, and there's a great chance for the new striker, Osmaich, and it's an excellent save to deny him. So, yeah, Liam Miller, just tremendous. And I think that will make a big difference, because you've got Potts, haven't you, on the other side, who's got power and pace, and he's more attacking, I think, than he is defensive. So you've got two guys out wide now that can really go out there and hurt opposition teams. You've got a solid back three, a very good goalkeeper in Woodman. And in front of that back three, they've got two kind of, you know, not fancy midfielders, but in McCann and Ledson, two guys that will stay and hold their positions and provide that solid base. So I think that Ryan Lowe is constructing a team that is going to be hard to beat. That's got a bit more threat maybe than it had last year. In this game, Will Keane, leading scorer, didn't feature. So they've got a little bit of depth too.
Yeah, good result for Ryan Lowe against his old team. First time he'd come up against Plymouth since leaving them. Sam, Friday night, you're at St Mary's. Boy, was I wrong about Southampton doing okay at the start of the season, huh? At least I was right about Casey McAteer. This was an absolute shoeing, wasn't it? What was the mood like on the South Coast for amongst those who stayed till the bitter end?
There was only about 30% of the Southampton fans left, I would say. I thought about this when I was having a little jog this morning, actually, because I was going to say toxic, but I thought that was too strong. What's just a few rungs down from toxic? What you got for me?
Ooh,
come on, Matt, you're the lyricist.
Yeah, not quite toxic, but not good. Sour? Is that not strong enough?
Yeah, no, that's good. Sour? That's good. Yeah. I wanted to say fractured, but I'm not sure if that's the right
fractious
ballpark.
Would
fractious.
Be
yeah, yeah, there you go. There was some kind of set to amongst the supporters down towards the technical area, but I wouldn't want to speculate because I'm not sure who it was directed at, but a couple of guys got frog marched out, I think after the fourth one went in. So yeah, there was a bit of booing and what have you, but there was a bit of booing after 2 or 3 minutes after they'd nearly given Leicester 3 goals. So nothing changed in that regard. I thought it was bloody good fun. I don't know about anyone else. And just
it was
really enjoyable
entertainment. Yeah.
And I hope there's no one sitting at home and no one sitting in the stands really, or have anyone of a neutral persuasion who's going, oh, God, defending's awful. They've got to do better than that. It was brilliant. I don't want either of them to improve in any regard. No, it was a great game to commentate on. There was so much action, so many chances. I've done so many bullet points. I'll try and get through some of them. Obviously, worst defensive record ever, I think, joint at this stage of a championship season, 6 games in with the 16 goals conceded. Yeah, I don't know where to start with Southampton. I think the goals, obviously, they gave away, the first two, are a problem with the way that they're set up, the way that they're trying to play. Why this keeps happening, I don't know. I thought Kyle Walker-Peters' position sometimes, going into the midfield, inverting, was problematic because of the amount of space it left Mavadidi. So I think he's always kind of recovering, trying to get back into his position. And Clarkie was a winger. Invariably, you would have been playing up against someone, I think, and getting tight, the fullback, that is, getting tight and being aggressive. And I just think Kyle Walker-Peters is always in recovery mode. So Mavadidi is picking the ball up, and rather than having someone tight and someone to manipulate the ball past, it feels like that Southampton are just recovering too late, in transition, too open, as Clarkie spoke of last week. And I just thought it was worth mentioning him because in terms of the tactical setup, he is the one that is doing something a little bit different. That said, I thought Mavadidi was so, so good. That second one as well, I suppose the second goal, is Will Smallbone's misplaced pass. But Kyle Walker-Peters, if he's playing as an orthodox right back, wouldn't be receiving the ball where he is. So I think there are problems with the Southampton setup. I don't know what the answer is. I wouldn't want to tell Russell Martin what he should do. Obviously, in the second half, I think Gavin Bazunu kicked a little bit more, and actually it was quite profitable at times. So you can do that, but I think it's probably just the intricacies of the setup. They're still going to pass, not going to rip up the script. With that, I thought Vardy bullied the two centre-halves. I've not seen Jamie Vardy in that mood for a long time. Not the goal, running beyond, the physical duels, winning. I thought Harwood Bellis looked a little bit off it. I thought he was going to be a big difference maker for them. And I think Southampton are a little bit samey in midfield. And I think that's partly down to Jack Stevens and Bednarak not being available right now. So Charles had to play as a centre-half. But I think Downs, Smallbone, they're a little bit similar for me, and they need a ball winner in there if they're going to continue in this style, in this setup. Leicester on the flip side, I mean, yes, there was a mistake for the goal. Doyle, Harry Winks nearly presented Southampton with a goal. But going forward, really enjoyed them. McAteer, I thought Mavadidi was incredibly exciting. I'm still laughing about the one he should have squared to Jamie Vardy. And I'm still laughing that he took the strike on for his goal. I can't believe it. It was a 3v1.
Ballsy, wasn't it?
It was unbelievable. It was a great finish. But I was just thinking, you've got to square that now to Dewsbury Hall, I think it was, who played a couple of sublime passes during the game. But yeah, really exciting, Leicester. And you know, I left thinking, yes, there's big problems for Southampton, but Leicester, I wouldn't tarnish them with the same brush. I walked away saying that is a team with a good variation. Yes, they can keep the ball, but in the two centre-halves, Vestergaard and Doyle, good range of passing, back to front quickly, diagonals. They do what Southampton were trying to do, just a little bit better, and they're a bit more polished. And finally, 33 passes leading to that Ndidi goal. That was absolutely tremendous to see live. As that was building, Clarkie, Matt, you'd have been there. You're like, this, please end in a goal. Please end in a goal. And when it did, absolutely gorgeous.
What a squad they've got. I mean, just looking at their bench, Fass, Cody, Casadei, Iheanacho, Choudhury, Daka and Moore on there. It's pretty strong. And
they're winning the league, aren't they?
I mean, they're going to Burnley, aren't they?
I think so, personally. I said it at the start of the season. I'm not going to change my mind. I just think they've got the best squad and they're playing some really good football. Sam's right. There's a nice blend there between the fantasy football and also sometimes going a little bit more direct. Yeah, I think Southampton. I don't think they'll get promoted under Russell Martin. I know that's a big statement to make. I just don't think they will, because Russell is all about what they do with the ball and not enough about the structure when they don't. And it's hampered him in previous jobs. You can't leave yourself that open. I mean, that last goal.
Marky, can I come in here? Because you'd have done this, I'm sure, in your tactical breakdown sometimes, right? Thomas Frank did it, pushing all his team to within 5 yards of the penalty box from corner kicks, right? Yeah. And Dominic Solanke scored against his Brentford team, if you remember, in the playoffs. Mm. Southampton's doing it at the weekend with Will Smallbone as their deepest player.
Yeah.
What, 10 yards from the area?
Yeah.
Mavadini nearly got in twice first half. And obviously, Sulemana gives the ball away second half. Will Smallbone isolated up against arguably the most athletic player on the pitch. Why are they setting up like that? And does he immediately change that for the next game?
Well, I think you've got to change it. I think you've got to be more pragmatic until your players are more comfortable, you know, doing the things that you're asking them to do. I think he's getting them to run before they can walk a little bit. I think it has to be incremental, step by step. And once they get better at all of the patterns of play that he's asking them to do, then maybe he can take a few more chances. But yeah, they are gifting too many goals to opposition teams. And everyone's going to look at that now. You know, I'm sure Leicester looked at what Sunderland did to them and they made them pay. Other sides will look to mimic that for sure. So, yeah, I can't see Southampton going up with Russell Martin. I don't think he'll be the manager come the end of the season.
You know, when you're commentating though, Clark, and you're trying to come up with, you know, what they have to do differently, and I know they can change system, but Russell Martin will be back on the training ground, I'm sure, this morning, just saying we've got to get better.
He said that. Yeah.
So is it a technical issue? Are the players not good enough to play like that? Or is
I'm not saying they're not good enough, but they're not good enough yet at it. You know, they're not comfortable enough to play those passes one touch, where they need to be one pass. They're taking the extra touch sometimes, or they're off balance when they're making the pass and they're giving it away. It's not fine-tuned well enough yet to play that way. Now, Martin will say, well, we've got to keep doing it until we get fantastic at it, and then you watch us go. And that might happen, but I still think that they are leaving themselves wide open when they don't have to. And it's for me, it's an idealist way of football. It's and the fact that afterwards he said, we went toe-to-toe with Leicester and I didn't see a huge amount between the teams. Now, from where I was sat in my living room, I saw a lot between the two teams. I think there's going to be a lot of points between those two teams come the end of the season. So I think Russell, you know, I admire him so much for his philosophy, but at times I don't know if he's seeing things how they are.
All right. Well, Nathan Jones is available. Just joking, Saints fans. That's the Championship. We'll be into League One next. Sam, only goal difference keeping Port Vale off the top of League One this after they beat Northampton thanks to Ben Garrity's thumping late winner. What are they doing so differently from last season to this?
I think credit to the decision makers at the club. I think David Flitcroft is still the director of football. I think this is Port Vale going different tact completely. I think they've had a history maybe of signing more experienced players, probably from the local area vicinity, and being really, I suppose, hard to beat. Quite direct, I would say, under Darryl Clark. This is a much younger team, loads of energy, signing players from elite academies. Yeah, James Plant's one lad that's come through their academy, 19. Ollie Arblaster, why have you not spoken of him yet, Matt, this season? That is tremendous. 19 years on loan from Sheffield United, signed someone called Tom Sang from Cardiff. Alfie Devine, obviously, we know from Spurs. This is very unlike Port Vale. So I think the answer is better players, more creative players, Ethan Chislett as well. That said, the one problem at the moment is not putting teams to bed, not maybe scoring enough goals for their dominance. And I think it's partly a centre-forward issue. They've got James Wilson, who I really like, but maybe he's a better 10. Certainly he's better off someone. So Ryan Loft, they have got, is a bit short on fitness at the moment, but I think that's a bit of an issue that needs solved. And when you look a little deeper, I mean, it's great stuff, isn't it? They lost 7-0 at Barnsley on the opening day. They've won 7 of the next 9 in all comps by the odd goal. The other two are 0-0 at Blackpool and a 0-0 in a penalty shootout win against Crewe in the Cup. So they're winning a lot of narrow games. They're the lowest scorers in the top half. So whether this is going to be able to be maintained probably does boil down to how they do in the final third, if they can add a little bit more cutthroat football to their play. And this victory called for someone coming on and taking the balls by the horns. And Ben Garrity's really good at this, scoring from distance. He's quite single-minded, I think, around the 18-yard box. So no surprise that he stepped in and got the goal. But yeah, this is a different Port Vale, I would say. And I was probably a bit dismissive of Andy Crosby when he got this job. I probably thought it was an uninspiring appointment. So brilliant start to the season. 6 straight wins in all comps, scoring a lot of late goals. So I think that's a nod to the work that's been done in the summer and probably the youthfulness of his 11 now as well, and the depth, ability to make changes, like Garrity coming on. And with all that, they've got Ojo, who, by all accounts, it's been stupendous at the kind of anchoring job in the midfield, breaking up play, circulating the ball. So loads to like about it. Surprised that Northampton's game plan here very much sat in and tried to frustrate. I think they're better than that, but that is probably a sign to just how well Port Vale has started the season and the reputation that they're developing for themselves.
Yeah, looking good for Vale then. Oxford too. Last week we expressed our surprise at Lee Johnson taking the Fleetwood job. On Saturday, Lee Johnson expressed his surprise at the deficiencies of his new team, the Cod Army, battered at home by Oxford. A game buttressed by bangers, this one, Clarkie. Stanley Mills opening the scoring, and then Kyle Edwards with another great goal for 3-0. 5 wins from 6 for Oxford. Hasn't taken Liam Manning long to make a positive impression.
No, they look very well coached side, don't they? I'm pleased for Liam Manning because he showed so much promise, didn't he, at MK Dons. And now we're seeing him sort of regenerate a new club. Yes, he's been backed in the transfer market, but their numbers, I want to start with their numbers before I get to the game, if you don't mind. They are already the top passing side in League One. No team's put together more sequences of 10 or more passes. No one's had more build-up attacks where, you know, lengthy periods of time where you keep the ball and it turns into an attack. So that's great for the supporters at Oxford. But this is the stat that really surprises me. This is Oxford. This is a team under Carl Robinson that played, 3 defensive players, and everyone else wanted to go the other way, gave up loads of chances. Well, they've got the lowest expected goals against in open play in League One. So we talked earlier about Russell Martin's structure being off and too open. Well, Oxford isn't. They keep the ball well, but they don't take the risks. They're not giving up too many chances at all. One thing I will say is that they've scored loads of worldies. Like they're not meant to have scored this many goals so far this season. I think the XG puts them somewhere mid-table, but they've scored 5 extra goals. And 2 of those definitely came in this game, with Stanley Mills just ripped one into the top corner. He's on loan from Everton. What a first senior goal that is.
Great name as well, eh?
Oh, just superb. Yeah, it just works, doesn't it? I don't know why it's a great name, but it is. Kyle Edwards pretty much repeated the trick, didn't he? Cutting in from the left, just top bins, just absolutely sensational. So, yep, well done, Oxford. They look good. And remember, or I should point out rather, that their top scorers, Mark Harris and Tyler Goodrum, didn't start this game. So they've obviously got a lot of options going forward. Really convincing. As for Fleetwood, I think because they were beaten by 2 worldies, and the other goal wasn't bad either, by the way, a controlled volley from the edge of the box from Bowden, I think they can almost write this one off. Lee Johnson wasn't in the technical area. He had a long-standing ban upheld, so he was in the stand. So you can almost say he wasn't in charge of this one, and we'll move on. I think they'll get better, Fleetwood, under Lee Johnson.
Yeah, probably not a bad start for him, I guess. It just tempers expectation. And as you say, you can say it's not really my fault. Before we move to League Two, I just wanted to give a personal nod and thank you to Nottingham Forest supporter Colby Bishop for plundering a 95th minute equaliser for Portsmouth at Derby and then crowing about how much he enjoyed it because he's a Forest fan. Really, really playing to the gallery, certainly in terms of me there. Well done, Colby. You sound like a cheese, but you're good at scoring goals.
Can I before we move on from League One, the standard of goals across the weekend was tremendous. So many great curlers. So many whips into that far corner from various players. Devontae Cole, I remember, did one. Humphreys for Wigan did it. We saw a number. So, kudos to the players involved.
If we're doing any other business, Wickham, 3 on the bounce. Me going to that game against Orient about a month ago, that was the turning point. And, you know, like what we were saying about Swansea, Clarkie as well, caught between two styles, blah, 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 blah. Well, maybe... Yeah, maybe they're just grasping what Matt Bloomfield was after, because some outstanding results the last few weeks. I thought they were worth a mention.
Definitely.
Up to 8th.
Well done, the chair boys. In League Two, then, a week is a long time in football. Take the opportunity to reflect on the past week. Take the lessons learned from it. Hashtag always learning. Hashtag reflection. Interim boss of Tranmere, Nigel Adkins there. Plenty for him to hashtag reflect upon as his team conceded a 96th minute goal to lose 3-2 at Crawley. I'll ask you about the game in a second, Clarkey, but Crawley's safety officer put a note on the club website. It was a very, very lengthy note, actually, about the behaviour of supporters. This is part of it. Being new to the club, I was shocked and saddened at the behaviour of a small minority of the crowd. I won't call them supporters. The use of highly dangerous and toxic pyrotechnics and the missile throwing under the cover of the smoke put not the only the rest of the crowd in that area at risk, but also the players and stewards. If these people were genuine supporters like the rest of the amazing fans, they wouldn't put our club at risk of fines and points deductions. Something to keep an eye on, maybe, over the next couple of weeks at Crawley. But yeah, in terms of what happened on the pitch, Adrian, big win for Crawley, not the start Nigel Adkins was looking for.
No, you trust that he'll have slept well, though, afterwards, don't you, with Nigel? I think Crawley are the surprise team of the season for me. I think I tipped them to go down, and I wasn't alone in that. They look really well coached by Scott Lindsay. I know they got battered by Swindon, didn't they? Not long ago, 6-0. Since then, they've scored 3, 4, 4, and 3 in the next four games. I mean, that is impressive. In this match, they had 74% of the ball. This is Crawley. 16 shots, 7 on target. It's a really confident, dominant display. And they had to come twice from behind. So they showed a little bit of, you know, character as well to fight for the manager, because they were fully on top. And they've been on top in a lot of games. Just talked about Liam Manning and what he'd done at Oxford. I think Lindsay's doing something quite similar at Crawley. It's only Notts County who are just off the scale. They're like on a different planet when it comes to keeping the ball. But it's Crawley that are second in the division for possession, for long patient build-ups. It's remarkable, really. They're good at pressing. They win a lot of high turnovers. But they've got a lot of inexperience in their team, a lot of players playing at the level for the first time. So they do make mistakes, and they did in this game. They left the door open for Tranmere on a couple of occasions, and that's why they need to keep scoring threes and fours, because they're giving loads of goals away, particularly in open play. Only one team's given away more goals in open play than Crawley. So there are loads of positives, but they just need to tighten up a little bit. But yeah, really, really impressed, because a lot of these guys are new faces that came from non-league. Campbell, the guy up front, came from Gateshead. That's just one example. Bravo Crawley Town. But as for Tranmere, it's going to be a longer term project, isn't it? Under Adkins, I'm sure they'll pick up.
Doncaster won at Forest Green. Sam, we were talking about great goals. There were a couple in this game from the away side.
You giving that to Ben Close? Yeah, the cross at the end.
Yeah. Got it in my nose. I've got it in my nose. Was it across? That's exactly where I got it.
95% across.
You reckon?
Yeah. Did Harry Winks get one like that in a European game, wide left for Tottenham?
I reckon Adrian's got a couple of those as well.
Oh, yeah. I've definitely scored from crosses. Yeah, and I'd never admit it.
No, I don't know who the Doncaster player is on the far post, but someone's pulled into a nice area late in the game who I think Ben Close is trying to pick out. And I think there's a few like angles from pitch side which suggest the same as well. So I'm not giving that to him. Harrison Biggins' overhead kick, he can have that. That's outstanding. And funnily enough, just looking at some stuff this morning, I'm still a bit probably more worried about Doncaster Rovers than I am Forest Green Rovers after this victory.
Well, that was League Two, but we're going to stay in the fourth tier next as we do our scouting reports. Adrian, James Tilley, he's had a great start to the season for AFC Wimbledon. He was on target again this weekend. What is it that in particular has caught your eye about the player signed from Crawley, who we were talking about just before the break, and has made a fast start to life as a Womble?
Not half, yeah. I mean, Jacko, Sam's mate, did pay money. It's an undisclosed fee for James Tilley, so he obviously saw something in him. He played quite a lot at Crawley, but certainly didn't have the impact that he's had so far this season. 8 goals already from a player that's playing as a right winger, you know, a narrow right winger. So, you know, his previous best season has already been bettered across the EFL. So he's on fire. He's got a great left foot. I think that's got to be said first and foremost. His deliveries from set plays have created a couple of goals already. He loves to cut in from the right where he can bend it into the far corner. He did that at the weekend. He's done that previously. But what I like about him, and I don't want to say he reminds me of myself, but he does a little bit in terms of my latter years. When I not lost a bit of pace, but when I was a teenager, it was more about, you know, I was nippy and sharp. He's not really like that. And as I got older, I wasn't particularly nippy or sharp. What I could do was go both ways. I could go outside someone or I could cut inside because I had 2 decent feet. And that's what Tilly's got. He can hit them with his right with real confidence. And what I think he's doing under Jackson at Wimbledon is just pushing himself to get into those goal-scoring positions a little bit more than he did at Crawley. He's gambling. He's trying to be that second striker whenever he can. And he's on a real hot streak. Good team player as well. You know, track back and make tackles. And no, he made 7 tackles in that game against Chelsea in the Carabao Cup. So he's good for the gaffer as well, I would imagine, in terms of what he offers the team. So look, I don't think he's a world beater. I don't think he's headed for the Premier League, James Tilley, but he's a player that's on a hot streak at the moment. And he's, because he's technically sound and has got 2 good feet and he's been given a role that really suits him in the team. Previously, I don't think managers have known where to use him, left, number 10 or right. When he's playing on the right, cutting in, it's working. And if he carries on like this, he's going to end up 15 to 20 goals, which should just be a phenomenal return.
Yeah, he hadn't scored more than 5 in the league in the season before this time around. So he's already bested that. Sam, you've also gone for a League Two player, specifically one who plays for Colchester.
No, I wanted to go for the Brazilian Ronaldo, who reminds me of myself. No, I'm going for Joe Taylor, who's on loan at Colchester from Luton Town. And we didn't mention this, you know, early part of the season. This was a signing which I saw on social media or whatever. And I was, really, really flabbergasted, to be honest, because I thought he just scored
the disallowed goal, right? In the playoff final.
In the playoff final. And then had the mental strength, which could have been a career-defining moment. Honestly, that's what I was thinking when I was sat there at Wembley to take one of the penalties as well. I thought that showed enormous guts. And listen, I'm not saying he should be starting in the Premier League for Luton, but I thought, yeah, a League One team may be challenging or possibly even a Championship team may have taken a punt on him. So to see him end up in League Two was a big surprise. It's clearly Colchester's game. They've only scored 9 goals. He's got 5 of them. Got another one in the cup at Cardiff early part of the season as well. Looking a little bit deeper, they are creating chances and having shots, Colchester. So the chances are going to keep coming. And the mood he's in, he looks like he's going to be sticking them away. A few of the goals, predatory. So I think he's got that in his armoury, in the 6-yard box, always on the move. His goal at Cardiff actually is from a matter of a few yards, but he makes about 4 or 5 runs before the ball is actually cut back and finds him. So he looks like he's got a real goal scorer's knack. When he gets in one-on-one, I've seen a couple of different variations in his finishes. He can go with power. There's a nice one with the outside of the right foot, bit of guile. That said, he's very right-footed. At the weekend, he actually ran round a few to try and manufacture the strike on his right side. So that's definitely something for him to work on. He's having very few touches in the game as well. I think he's a presser. I think he closes really well from the front, which is where he got his goal at Bradford from. But I think he probably doesn't give you loads in build-up play. He's not someone that Colchester are looking to play into and build off. He's on the shoulder and he comes alive in the 18-yard box. And no surprise, he's been hooked in every game so far. So he's not lasted the 90. I think someone else comes on and be the finisher after, hopefully for Ben Garner, he's notched and got some points on the board for him. But yeah, really excited to see how he goes. And I haven't had time to see what the deal is, but in January, if he motors like this, if there is a break clause, there probably will be someone in League One or maybe the Championship trying to get him, because we know somebody guarantees you goals, you know, they're hard to come by.
Should we give some credit to a friend of the show? I think we should. Ross Embleton, obviously been on our podcast in its previous form many, many times, head of recruitment at Colchester United. So he's done a good job of clearly fostering a relationship with Luton, you know, making sure that they were in pole position to get him. Because I agree with you, Sam. If you're involved in a Championship playoff final and then a few weeks later you find yourself at Colchester United in League Two, that's a surprise. So, but it's good that his attitude is clearly spot on and he's up for making the most of it.
It's a bit hazy, the memory, but it came from him closing someone, didn't it? I think it was a mistake, but I think he is, you know, a little bit terrier-like, you know, the way he closes people down and stuck it away really nicely in that huge game. Yeah, I just thought it was...
Duncan Watmore about him, a little bit like that. You know, someone like that, a bit busy. I know he's a bit bigger, but yeah, like busy sort of.
And I just thought it showed incredible character. You know, like if he was to miss that penalty, what would that do to a young lad when he's trying to make his way in the game? And obviously, I think he was a little bit late to the pro game as well. So yeah, that looks to be a terrific signing.
Wales under 21 internationals. So that's two players in League Two we focused on for the scouting report, James Tilley and Joe Taylor. Right, we are nearly done for the day. League Two heavy second half of the show, because that's where the tweet of the week comes from. It's Nick Cerula of Crawley, who has put three pictures of himself during the game and says, kept on fighting till the end, boxing glove emoji. Great win for us all at Crawley Town FC. Football emoji, and then the letter A emoji, or as it is being described on my Twitter, negative squared Latin capital letter A. Sammy's put that, obviously, that last bit because it's a goal and assist. How do you feel about players making note of their contributions in the game in the form of emojis?
You're just setting me up to hammer people for no reason now. I've got a lot of ground to go with here. He's a man after my own heart, because only three people have commented on it. That's pretty much the traction I get on my tweets. Although he's got 124 likes. Quite like the boxing glove. Yeah, no problem with that. Great win for us all is interesting terminology. He's including everyone in that. But yeah, the goal and the assist I can always do without. Wouldn't have been my bag. My bag probably would have just been a picture of me enjoying a nice glass of vino after my notch. But yeah, I'm not going to hammer him, Matt, because it just feels like I'm becoming a bit one-dimensional during this segment.
He's tagged in at Crawley Town, Clarky. I noticed Crawley Town's bio includes their landline phone number, which I think Blackpool do as well. Something very sweet about that.
They're doing things differently this morning, aren't they, given that statement you read out earlier as well, Matt? Yeah. I'm all for it.
I mean, yeah, has anyone still got a landline? Incredible scenes. But yeah, fair play. Look, Cerula, what I'll say about him, he's having a good season. Three goals, two assists. He's a wing-back, remember? So, yeah, he's a key man for them. And yeah, I'm with Sam. We don't need to batter him too much.
Where can people find us on social media, please, Adrian?
On X/Twitter, it's at EFLWhatThe. And yeah, look, and if you see the link and you like the pod, please give it a share. So, you know, tell your friends about it. Really, really helps we get those reposts, as they're called now. Same applies on TikTok and Instagram, but our handle's different on there. It's at What the EFL. So yeah, we'll put clips out of us in action on those mediums.
And yeah, before we go, a reminder of the offer from our friends at QuinBet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. If you do want to sign up, make sure you do use that link, by the way. We get a little kickback if you do so. It is 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. All right. That'll do us for this week. We'll be back next week. I mean, I can't believe we've got through a whole episode without talking about a manager who was sacked. I'm sure that that will become obvious once I hit publish on the podcast and three go at once or whatever. But hey, we'll save that for next week. Thanks then to Adrian and to Sam and to you for listening. We'll catch up with you again next week. Enjoy the midweek matchups if you go into one, and we'll speak to you soon. Bye for now.